But for today, chapter 21 of Genesis, starting at verse 22. When I was a youth pastor in Texas, we dealt with a lot of kids that were kind of the inner city type, real poor, very low income. In fact, where we were at was one of the poorest areas in Texas, not just inside the city of Dallas, but in Texas. And they had the highest rate of child molestation and sexual assault among children among anybody else in the entire county. And this was the county that had the city of Dallas in it. So the kids there were very poor, very rough. And there was a lot of them that just weren't very trustworthy. You couldn't really believe what they said very often. And you couldn't trust what was going on. And I noticed one day when I was with these kids, especially this one kid, everything he said to people, he would follow it up with, "I swear," or "I promise." He had to follow everything up with that. And I noticed that and thought it was weird. And then I realized why. It's because this kid had gained such a reputation for being untrustworthy and being somebody that lies, that nothing he said people believed. It didn't matter what he said. People didn't believe it. And so he had to swear every time he said something that it was true, just so people would actually pay attention to what he said and actually believe him. And of course, even after that, a lot of times he still lied. But that obviously that type of reputation he had, it hurt his reputation among the other kids. It made for a lot of discord among a lot of people. It certainly was not very peaceful being around him, because it's hard to be peaceful around somebody that you can't trust. And you knowing you couldn't trust this kid, it made it so that was really hard to have a sense of peace when you're around him. And that's sort of what's happening to Abraham in chapter 21. Chapter 21 and 22 are the conclusion to Abraham. All the tensions, all the problems, all the things that have been building up since chapter 12 finally start to get resolved in chapter 21 and 22. And of course, earlier in 21, you have the birth of Isaac. And so that's a huge tension that's been around since chapter 12. And then also Ishmael gets sent away, which was a problem that had been occurring since chapter 16. This question of Ishmael and Hagar and what they're going to do with that family. And then at the end of chapter 21, you get the reintroduction of this guy named Abimelech. Now in chapter 20, just one chapter previously, Abimelech showed up. If you remember, he was the guy that one of the guys that Abraham told that Sarah was his sister, which was a half-truth, but didn't tell him that she was his wife. And so he took Sarah as his wife. And if God hadn't stopped that whole situation, then it would have been a huge problem, even a bigger deal than what it was. And Abimelech ends up giving Sarah back to Abraham with a lot of stuff and chastising Abraham for lying to him about who Sarah is. And so with that in mind, then we pick up in verse 22 of chapter 21. Somebody read for me. Let's do verses 22 through 26. Somebody read for me those.
And it came to pass at that time that Abimelech and Phishol, the commander of his army, spoke to Abraham, saying, "God is with you in all that you do. Now, therefore, swear to me by God that you will not deal falsely with me, with my offspring, or with my posterity, but that according to the kindness that I have done to you, you will do to me to the land in which you live with." And Abraham said, "I will swear." Then Abraham rebuked Abimelech because of the well of water which Abimelech's servants had seized. And Abimelech said, "I do not know who has done this thing. You did not tell me, nor had I heard of it until today."
Right. Very good. So the beginning of 22 tells us that about at the same time that all this is happening with Ishmael and Hagar, this other event happens in Abraham's life. And Abimelech comes to him along with his commander, Phicol. And I don't know, I'm not sure why he brought Phicol. The only thing I could think is it was a sign of knowing that military strength, knowing that Abraham had previously lied to him, and that there's a tension between these two people. There's a unresolved conflict, unresolved issues between Abraham and Abimelech. I feel like he brings Phicol around because he knows that that conflict and that tension is still between them. And we learned, and Abimelech is not a believer. He's a pagan. He's definitely not somebody who's following the Lord, but he does recognize two things about Abraham. On the one hand, he recognizes, it says that God is with Abraham in everything he does. He sees Abraham. He knows God is with Abraham. He knows God protects Abraham. He knows that people that associate themselves with Abraham end up getting blessed by God too, which, by the way, is how we get blessed by God also, by our association, by faith. But he also knows something else about Abraham, and that's why he came, and it's that Abraham deals falsely with people. This has been a problem that he has probably been doing for a long time. As we talked about when we did this passage in 20, that he's probably lied about Sarah, not just to Abimelech and in Egypt, but he probably had done that a lot to a lot of different people as they went on. And it might have been just a sin or an idol that they've kind of kept in their lives and couldn't get rid of. And so it's ironic that you have this guy, and we would call an un-Christian. Of course, there weren't really Christians then, but a non-Christian pagan recognizes that God is with him and that you can't trust him, which is an awesome testimony and a sad testimony at the very same time. And so he's come to bring peace again to this relationship because they're living in the same land. And he wants them to swear an oath or make a covenant with each other that Abraham won't deal falsely with them, and that Abraham's posterity will treat his posterity kindly, because Abimelech has been kind to Abraham this whole time too. And Abraham agrees. But there's one more thing that has to be resolved between these guys before this peace can be guarded, before they can finally, you know, nail this coffin shut. And that is that some of Abimelech's guys have stolen or seized Abraham's well. And apparently this was, people complained about this a lot back then, so apparently this is pretty common, but you need the well to live in the land. I mean, this is an area that it's not like they got water everywhere like here. So you take somebody's well, you take their ability to live there. And so Abraham complains, oh yeah, so you want to make peace. I'm okay with making peace, but we need to get this settled too. Your guys have taken my well, and I need you to do something about that. And in verse 26, pretty similar to what he says in chapter 20, Abimelech claims ignorance of it. He says he doesn't know who did it. He didn't know this was happening. He just learned about it till now. The implication being similar into chapter 20, that he's innocent of it because it wasn't by his orders or anything like that. So y'all got any comments or questions about this section before we read what happens next?
Was Abimelech afraid of
Abraham? I think he was a little afraid of Abraham.
Because of his military power?
I don't think it was because of his military power. I think it was what he says here, that he knew God was with him. Yeah. And the word God, the word God there in the Old Testament, anytime you see God like that, it was just the generic word for God. So he's not saying Yahweh, which is what we would expect if it was a believer. He's just saying Abraham's God is clearly with them, and he's clearly powerful. And I think that's what makes Abimelech scared. Yeah. Somebody read, God, I don't have any more questions. Verses 27 through 30. Those four verses, 27 through 30.
So Abraham brought sheep and cattle and gave them to and the two men made a treaty. Abraham set apart 7 ewe lambs from the flock, and Amulek asked Abraham, "What is the meaning of these 7 ewe lambs you have set apart of themselves?"
Yeah, and
he replied, "Accept this servant, the 7 lambs from my hand as a witness that I dug this well."
Very good. So, verse 27, they begin this ceremony of making a treaty or making a covenant, and it involves exchanging of goods. It involves an animal sacrifices. Abraham's the one that provides those animal sacrifices, but then he also sets apart these 7 lambs. And what's interesting about this passage is Old Testament narratives never added stuff accidentally. What I mean is, if they added a lot of details into something, it's because those details were important. So when you look at this passage and you realize in verses 27 through 30, that one verse is about the covenant, and then 28, 29, and 30 all describe these 7 lambs, what they're for. It's pointing out and showing that this is an important thing that's happened, because he's spending so much time explaining that one event. He's spending 3 whole verses. And you and I could think, we could probably say that Abraham set 7 ewe lambs aside as a witness that he built the well. I mean, you think that could be all he had to say. Why did he have to do 3 whole verses for this thing? Is because he's emphasizing for us that this is an important thing that's happening. So the 7 lambs, there's in the Hebrew, there's a connection between the word 7 and the word treaty. And so the idea of setting aside 7 lambs in it, there's some sort of connection with being truthful, with swearing, with creating a treaty, with showing that what you've said is true. And that's why there's 7 lambs. That magic number is important. And he does that as a way of proving to Abimelech that he hasn't lied to him again. That really is his well, and he wants it back. And so at that point, they've sworn, they've made a treaty, and they're at peace with one another again. Y'all have any comments or questions about these verses?
Is that what the treaty's about? For them just to have peace with each other?
Yeah. Abimelech, technically, Abraham is sojourning on Abimelech's land. But Abimelech knows that Abraham is powerful. And according to that verse, he knows he's powerful not because of his man strength, but because of his God strength, if we can use like a sermonized sentence. And that scares maybe Abimelech. And so he's going to make this treaty with the hopes of basically getting Abraham on his side. He wants to make sure that Abraham's God is blessing him and not against him. So he wants to associate with Abraham so he can receive the blessings of God instead of associating against Abraham and receiving the curses of God. And the well was a thorn in their side that they had to resolve before that could be made. And it's surrounding this idea of making sure that he believes Abraham's truthfulness, that this is Abraham's well and not Abimelech's well that he's stealing from him.
Abraham has lied to him before.
Yes. That's why he has to give the 7 ewe lambs. He's saying, "I swear this is my well," basically, is what he's saying. Just like that kid did that I used to have on Wednesday nights. You know, "I swear, I promise, and tell him the truth. This is my well."
He also wants to extend this treaty to his offspring's descendants.
Yeah.
It's long term.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
So you're saying that Abraham gave Abimelech all the lambs then?
Yes. The 7 lambs is proof that he was telling the truth. So in light of what's going on, we have to remember this is the conclusion of the Abraham story. We're resolving tension. One more tension that's resolved, and I guess I could talk about this after we read, is basically Abraham's getting old. And he's definitely on the later end of his life. I mean, he had a kid at 100. So God had been promising him this idea of him and his descendants being in the land for the past 25 years. But Abraham's never really had a home. He's, even now, he's sojourning. He's living in tents, like he doesn't live anywhere. And so that tension of, you know, is God really going to give us the land? Is he really going to provide for us here? That's starting to get resolved, because you're seeing Abraham making peace with the people in the land and being promised the ability to stay, and not just stay, but stay in an area that had a really good well, which could provide for them every need they had in that land. And so that tension and that part of God's promise is getting resolved by this covenant too for Abraham. Abimelech's just thinking that he's getting an ally who's not going to attack him. But Abraham's seeing that God's promises of the land are coming true through Abimelech's covenant with him, or treaty with him.
What does Bereshit mean?
Well, let's read that. Verses 31 through 34. Who wants to read that?
Therefore, that place was called Beersheba, because there both of them swore an oath. So they made a covenant at Beersheba. Then Abimelech, and Phicol, the commander of his army, rose up and returned to the land of the Philistines. Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba and called there on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. And Abraham sojourned many days in the land of the Philistines.
So verses 31 through 34 is the conclusion, the wrap up of this story. And it tells us four things. One, it tells us that they renamed the place Beersheba, which it refers to the place Beersheba at the beginning of chapter 21. But that's probably Moses looking back, telling people where Hagar went, knowing that's what it's called to, in Moses' day. It's probably not what it was called when Hagar was there. And Beersheba means either the well of seven or the well of swearing. Because again, in the Hebrew, that word swear and the word seven are very similar, almost indistinguishable. So we don't know if it means well of swearing, well of seven, probably where well of, which is hard to say, well of swearing. Especially, anyways, well or well of the oath or something like that. So the naming of that place is a continual reminder not only of God's provision and protection for Abraham in the land and the fact that he gave Abraham land just like he promised, but also a reminder to the Israelites that this is their land. When they say the name Beersheba, they'll remember God had promised us this land and Moses made a covenant with Abimelech that this is our land. Secondly, Abimelech and Phicol, they leave and return to their land, the Philistines. So they made peace. That tension is resolved. The conflict that was causing Abraham to not be the man of God God wanted him to be toward those pagans, that obstacle is not there anymore. Now that he has peace, he can renew that relationship and really show what God wants for people through that relationship now. Third, Abraham plants a tree and calls on the Lord. The planting of a tree is symbolic, because you don't plant a tree and then leave next month, right? I mean, if you plant a tree at your house, that probably means you're going to be there. Of course, they're probably planting like little tiny trees. You're probably planning to be there while to see the tree grow up. So it was a sign and a symbol that it's his land. He's staying here. He's finally starting to reside. And it would be a sign for people in the future, a reminder of what happened on that day when they see that tree. And then it said that he called in the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. It's interesting that he worshiped God after this, because when you look back in his story, the only other time that it's mentioned him doing this is 12:8. In chapter 12, at the very beginning, when Abraham just left his family, it said, then he proceeded from that place to the mountain east of Bethel and pitched his tent there, with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. So you, again, like I said, this is a conclusion. It's tying all the way back to the beginning where Abraham set off praising the Lord when God initially gave him that promise in chapter 12. And now he's seeing the promises come true, and he's praising the Lord again now in chapter 21. And then 34 tells us that he was sojourning there in the land for many days. What's cool about 34, and the book of Hebrews picks up on this, the chapter, verse 34, is that the words used for Abraham living are always stuff like sojourn in the NASB. They're always words for temporary residence. Even though Abraham planted a tree and he has a well and he made this covenant, it never said that he built a house or he permanently dwelled there. And the book of Hebrews picks up on that fact to point to us saying that Abraham's faith was not literally in having a plot of land on earth, but he always saw himself as a sojourner waiting for God to give him the true promised land, which is heaven. That his salvation was never earth-based or works-based. It was always faith-based, looking for God to give him a relation with him in heaven. That's what the book of Hebrews tells us in chapter 12 as well. So that's the end of that story. Y'all have any questions about that or anything y'all want to point out that stuck out to you?
Is there anything special about the tree? Is the tree was named?
The tamarisk tree? The tamarisk was a type of tree, and I don't think there was anything specific. The tamarisk trees are mentioned a lot as landmarks. So the choice of a tamarisk would have been significant because it would have been noticed as a landmark, but there wasn't anything symbolic other than that.
I've got the King James Study Bible, and it just calls it a grove.
A grove?
He planted a grove for Sheba.
Google says these trees were often used as memorials. Yeah. Great men. It is therefore appropriate that Abraham should honor God by planting the tamarisk.
Yeah.
It would be a permanent memorial of the covenant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a permanent reminder, as permanent as a tree can be, of what happened on that day. People, they live a long time. So many generations would have seen it and remembered the story. You know, they didn't have Bibles. So that a lot of their stuff they were saying was oral. You know, let me rephrase that. The individuals in their homes didn't have Bibles. The religious leaders had Bibles. And so to most people, they would have to learn things by memory because they didn't have a Bible at home they could go to. They either have to go to the temple or they'd have to memorize it. So stuff like tamarisk trees were helpful in reminding people of these stories and helping them to remember them.
This is long before God instructed them to destroy everyone that was in the promised land.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, they're getting along with them.
Yeah.
I guess they got some choices. There's not enough of them.
Yeah, and the reason why God told them to destroy everybody in the promised land was not just so Israel would have land, but because the people in the promised land were bad. I mean, way bad. And so we can't take the later generations' horribleness and then apply it to Abimelech. He might not have been quite as bad, you know, and not deserving that sort of temporal, worldly punishment like that. You know, we're not speaking about his soul. We're talking about judgment in the earth today. He might not have deserved immediate retribution. Kind of like Jonah, you know, with Nineveh. Like they needed punishment done in the world today because of their wickedness. That's how the people in the promised land were. They needed it that day.
San Francisco.
Well, God just has a lot of patience.
We have Jesus.
Christ came, and he's reserving everything for when he comes back. Christ hadn't come yet in the Old Testament, so. So what does this passage teach us about God?
He's always faithful.
Yeah.
Problem. Solve the problem.
I don't give him verse 33, everlasting God.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of fits because, you know, it shows the everlasting nature of that of the covenant that God made with Abraham wouldn't be broken.
Yep. What does this passage teach us about what we should be doing today?
Share who God is.
Yeah.
Getting along with people.
And those are related. It's hard to share gospel with people if you aren't getting along with them, which was Abraham's problem with Abimelech. And that was the lesson for the Israelites too. Remember, this is written by Moses for the Israelites also. He's, of course, you know, like the promised land people, he told them to wipe out. But outside the promised land, they were supposed to be at peace with people outside the promised land. And they were supposed to share God's goodness with them. And he was part of the idea that Moses tells them, that God tells them in the Old Testament, is be at peace with people outside the promised land because you're supposed to be a kingdom of priests to them. You're supposed to show them God's goodness. We're the same way. Make peace with people because you're supposed to be sharing God's goodness to them. It's hard to be ranting on Facebook and then people accept what you have to say about Jesus.
We spent millions of dollars and many lives in Afghanistan and they can't stand us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does it say anywhere in there how big the promised land was?
It does in Joshua. It gives borders.
It gives borders.
Mm-hmm. Definite borders.
Borders.
Mm-hmm. It's bigger than what national Israel is now, which is what part of the problem that national Israel now has a problem with, because national Israel now is smaller than the borders and the Bibles tell them they should be, which is why they're not happy. Here's a tough one. We'll close with this. Where do y'all see Christ? How does this passage point us to Christ?
He's still the water.
Anytime you see well, it's Jesus is the water of life. It's true. Well, that's not the one I was thinking of, though. Water, bread. See that? Got it.
I think it shows that even though we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing, you're still on the path there.
Yeah. I mean, God's mercy with Abraham. And when we get into chapter 22, Abraham has still one more idol in his life. And that's what chapter 22 is about.
Abimelech exhibited forgiveness.
Yeah. And he was...
And actually kind of offered or petitioned Abraham. You know, I didn't know that this was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he made a concession.
Yeah.
It was as much fear as it was for you.
Yeah.
Forgive me first.
This is one way that Christ interacts with this passage. You know, Abimelech came partially because he saw that Abraham's God was on him and that people who associated themselves with Abraham got blessed. And when we turn to the New Testament, we see that same idea, that the reason why we as Gentiles are not Jewish in our heritage, and even really the Jews at this point after Christ, the way we get a part of this promise God made about Abraham was not totally about just a literal physical land. It was ultimately about the promise of heaven. Heaven's the ultimate promised land. A relationship with God is the ultimate place we want to be. And the New Testament tells us that even though that promise is given to Abraham, we are grafted into that promise by faith in Christ. Just like how Abimelech could, to some degree, receive blessings from God because he associated himself with Abraham and Abraham's God. We receive blessings from God when we associate ourselves with Abraham and Abraham's God by faith in Christ. And because of that, when you go to the book of Revelation, it talks about the end times. Like Josh was saying in his prayer, it doesn't talk about just Abraham's physical descendants being there, it says people from every nation, every tongue, every tribe are going to be there, because God is extending his blessings to every people group through faith in Christ. So this passage begins to show us that God is not just interested in Abraham and his descendants, his physical descendants, but he's interested in expanding his kingdom to everybody on the earth that's willing to be associated with God, the God of Abraham. And ultimately find, make that possible through what Jesus Christ did for us on the cross. And so we're thankful for what Jesus did, that he made that possible for us.
Would you say now that we're going backwards? We're losing.
Losing what?
Christians. We're less, there's less of us than there was.
There's might be less. That's a hard question, because there might be less Christians by name in America, but America has historically been a Christian country, and people have claimed to be Christians even though they weren't saved. So it's hard to tell how many people called themselves Christians in the past and actually were saved. And then on top of that, even though in obvious countries like in Europe, where it's obvious that there's way less Christians than there used to be, because or up north in North America, I mean, in the Northeast, where the Puritans used to live, and it was a religious haven, and now it's not. Those places have way less Christians than they used to. But there's other areas in the world that Christianity is exploding. It's exploding in China. It's exploding in South Korea. It's exploding in South America and Africa. It's exploding in the Southeast Asia. So even though we might see Christianity is decreasing in some of our areas, Christianity is not decreasing when we look at the entire world.
Exploding in China.
Yeah.
It's not very many. I mean, you don't have to have much growth to say you're exploding.
It's rapidly, like the government's having to take steps. Now, the government in China is not as against Christians like we talk about Afghanistan. They do have churches in China, like buildings. They just, the government wants to control what they can say, which is what gets Christians in trouble in China. We know a Christian likes the government telling us what we can and cannot say, and China is no different. And that's where the China Christians get in trouble, why they have to have house churches sometimes. But yeah.
This happened in America.
The other thing
I've been reading this is Lincoln swearing several times.
Yeah.
I've heard in churches that you do not swear.
Yeah.
So what's the...
Well, Jesus tells us in the New Testament that we shouldn't swear, because he says we should be so truthful that people shouldn't require us to swear. So the fact that somebody might require you to make an oath or to swear is really an indictment that they don't trust you, which is bad. They should trust you and trust you even if you don't swear. So yeah, so that idea comes from the fact that Jesus tells us not to swear, because he said there shouldn't be a reason for it. People should just trust you without having to go through all that.
Okay.